Thanks for joining us today on WPR News, and I want to welcome you to another meeting of our Larry Miller Show Book Club. So glad you could make it. We're talking today about the novel The Killer's Terms, and with me in the studio, the author, Kevin Kleisner, and he's here to answer your questions and talk about the book and talk about writing and a whole lot more. He's a graduate of Marquette University. He's been an outdoor writer for a daily newspaper. He was a teacher, a hospital administrator, and, of course, an author. He might be the only person who is a member of the American College of Healthcare Executives and the International Thriller Writers. And he lives in New Berlin, Wisconsin. And as we talk with him, I want to hear from you. Did you read The Killer's Terms? Or have you read any of the Cole Hipsch novels? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Kevin Kleisner, welcome. Thanks for joining in today.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks so much for having me.
I really enjoyed your book. And maybe just to start, what's the story about for those who haven't read it? I mean, I know there are a lot of people who've read it who are listening, but there are also probably more that haven't. So give us a rundown.
Sure. So the Cole Hipsch series is a thriller series. And it's along the lines of, let's say, the John Sanford, Lucas Davenport series. And that's set in the Twin Cities. This follows Cole Hipsch, who's an FBI agent, special agent in charge of the Milwaukee, Wisconsin field office. And that puts him in charge of kind of all the FBI activity in Wisconsin. And there's a dual protagonist. And that's Michelle Fields. And Michelle Fields is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So these two basically get together, and they were thrown together in the first book, and they have to work together to solve crimes.
But they fall in love, too.
Well, they might. Yes, they do. And it's funny. You know, you write a series like this, and you never know where it's going to go when you start out with the first one. But in the first book, they had a lot of issues that they had to get through. And there's one thing that I believe, Larry, that we've lost in society today, and that's the ability to have civil discourse where, you know, we're so divided. And in my books, the protagonists in particular maintain respect, even though they might have disagreements about different things.
Yeah, it's and that can be tough to do.
It can be.
Yes, especially if you have your own strong opinions. You have the book involves the attempt. It starts with the attempted murder of Michelle,
right?
And along the way, sort of solving that issue, and a lot of other issues come up that I want to talk about with you as we go along today. But you have an excerpt. Do you have an excerpt that we can just start with?
Sure.
From the book? To give people an idea for those who haven't read?
Yeah, no, and I'll just see if I can tee this up. So this starts in the first book. I need to share this.
Yeah.
There were reproductive health physicians were being targeted for murder. And Michelle and Cole basically had to work together to solve those murders and put an end to it. And in the subsequent books, she writes, based on her experience as a journalist, she writes a true crime book on that experience, which she calls The Killer Sermon. And that coincidentally is the name of my first novel. But anyway, so this opening chapter, and I'll kind of jump into the middle of it, but in the opening chapter, she's getting ready to do an author talk at the Milwaukee Public Library. So here we go. She took a deep breath and held the warm September air in her lungs, feeling the kiss of the early autumn sun on her face. She smiled when she turned to look up at the main entrance of the library, which spanned the entire city block. Its stoic gray Bedford limestone walls rose 3 stories above a raised basement. It was a far cry from her hometown library. She'd grown up on her parents' dairy farm outside Wabino, Wisconsin, 1.5 hours north of Green Bay, and over 3 hours away from where she currently stood. The Wabino Public Library was a tiny log cabin built in 1897 and converted into the town library nearly 100 years ago. Her mom drove her to the library every week until Michelle was old enough to ride her bike into town, the white plastic wicker handlebar basket filled with stories to broaden the mind and imagination of a young girl. She looked at the mammoth building in front of her again. This was a different library altogether. Less than a year ago, Michelle was a general assignment reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It was exciting work when she first started right out of college. But by the time she turned 35, she felt like she was still writing stories that nobody would remember beyond the next day. That all changed when she covered the murders of reproductive health physicians, and the killer reached out to her repeatedly via email. Michelle helped the FBI track down the killer, and after he died in a shootout with law enforcement, Michelle took a sabbatical from reporting duties to write a true crime thriller about the murders. She received a large advance, and now the widely anticipated book sat atop the New York Times and other bestseller lists a week after its release. Michelle smiled. Heady stuff for a Wabino farm girl. She pushed through the middle set of large wooden double doors and entered the library's 3-story marble pillared atrium. It took her breath away. To her right was the Wisconsin Writers' Wall of Fame, and she marveled at the list of names, including legends like Aldo Leopold, John Muir, Carl Sandburg, Laura Ingalls Wilder, John Thornton Wilder, and Orson Welles. She also recognized David Marinus, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who grew up in Madison before going on to a long and legendary career with the Washington Post. Meeting him in high school had helped steer Michelle to her own career in journalism and to the place she stood right now. And there was no place she'd rather be.
Oh, it gives us a great introduction to her, where she's from, kind of what she stands for a little bit. But you know that there's fireworks, kind of, so to speak, are on the way.
Well, you know, they say it's always darkest before the dawn, and sometimes when you're at your peak is when something comes around in life that drops you very low, right? And so, obviously, she's at the pinnacle of something right here, and she's feeling great about it.
And you knew something was coming, and it made for a really great introduction to me, because I knew what was coming. I learn about her, and I already feel good about her, you know. But I know that there's harm on the way.
It's funny because I was thinking about this just the other day, and it reminded me this scene in the first. It's almost like Mary Tyler Moore. When she comes to, I think it was it Minneapolis?
Yeah.
And she throws her hat up in the air, and she's so happy to be there. I don't know, I want people to feel deeply about the characters.
Yeah.
And obviously I invest some time in that. But the other thing about this chapter, which runs through to my work, is it describes a little bit about something in Wisconsin that I think those of us from Wisconsin love to hear about. And I think people who live outside of here, it's any novel like this, I think the first thing ought to be you're trying to entertain readers.
Yeah.
But if they can learn something while they read it, that's better.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know, Denise in Waukesha has a question for you. Let's go there.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you, Larry, for this wonderful show. I love listening to your program.
Thank you.
And especially when you bring on authors, it's always fun. You know, they say you can't judge a book by its cover. And I think in Kevin's case, you can, because his covers are hauntingly really beautiful and moody. You know, the first one in color and the next two in black and white. So my question is to Kevin, Can you share your intentions behind your book cover choices?
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah, go ahead. You know what, Denise? I had the same question in my head, but so go ahead, Kevin.
Well, great. And Denise, thanks for calling in. I really appreciate it. And I love to talk about this, and I'll tell you why. When I signed my deal, I signed a 3-book contract with my publisher, Level Best Books. And, you know, I was going to be a debut author at 63. So I had zero leverage. And I read the contract, and that contract said they had basically the final say over every word and every image. I mean, it was all theirs. And so when the first book came out, they gave me 3 different covers to choose from. And, you know, I didn't know. None of them meant anything to me. And I shared them with friends and beta readers. And basically, it all came back a third, a third, a third. And so I just said to my publisher, just pick. You guys know this business better than I do. With my second book, you know, the first one did pretty well for them. I got, you know, a little bit of moxie. And I have 3 grown children. One of them has his degree in fine arts, and he's an amazing artist. He was just commissioned to do the opening day poster for the Milwaukee Brewers. So, you know, anyway, I asked him, I said, there's no guarantee that my publisher will use it, but would you please, I've got this scene in the second book, it was set at Atwater Park in Shorewood, Wisconsin, the scene on the cover. And it actually is a scene from the book, but it shows a piece of sculpture, and that sculpture really sits there, and it's kind of moody looking out over Lake Michigan. And so I asked my son if he would design a cover based on that. So he painted it and then did the cover, and my publisher said, we love it. And so they went with that. And with this one, there's a scene that takes place at Marquette University it's called the St. Joan of Arc Chapel. And that chapel was built originally in the early 1400s. It was built in France. And legend has it that St. Joan of Arc, when she was 17, prayed there before a big victory against the English. And so, long story short, they moved that chapel originally, I think, in the early 1900s to New York.
Brick by brick, I would assume.
Stone by stone. And then it was moved in the early 1960s to Marquette University's campus. And it's just this little, beautiful chapel. And I'm sure it's the oldest building in Wisconsin. But it's also kind of the heart of Marquette University. And it's one of those places where I would go as an undergrad if I had a crisis in confidence or conscience or even faith. And I would find myself there, and it would help me center myself. And so to be able to use that cover, you know, in my cover, to be able to basically have a collaboration with my son, whose name happens to be Cole, it's just one of the great fun things of this author journey.
And the publisher loved that one as well then,
absolutely. Absolutely. Didn't make a change. And what's nice now is I feel like it's almost as an author and your books, if you can have kind of a brand, just like a business, it's a good thing. And so my last 2 books, I think, have a very common look and feel.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Denise?
Yes.
That help you out?
It sure does. Thank you so much, and best of luck with your books. They're really wonderful. I thoroughly enjoy them.
Oh, thank you, Denise.
Thanks, Denise.
You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you can email the email address talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. At noon today, we'll talk about Earth Fest. It's a week-long event celebrating environmental and sustainability research at UW-Madison. And at 12:30, we'll talk with a Rhinelander shoe repairman who's been in the business for more than 50 years. Looking forward to those, but also looking forward to continuing my conversation with Kevin Kleesner. And it's the Larry Mueller Show Book Club book for this segment, and it's titled The Killer's Terms. Questions or comments, I hope you'll join in. The number to call again, 800-642-1234. Or you could email to talk at WPR.org. Back to the title for just a minute, because I noted in the title, The Killer's Terms, that the apostrophe was after the S.
Well, we had more than one killer, so. But it's funny. I've had a number of people point that out to me. It's good.
Barbara in Cross Plains has something for us. Barbara, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much, WPR, for this great stuff you do, like telling us about great authors and great books. I'm a daily reader. I belong to book clubs. And I was born and raised in the Midwest with ties to Wisconsin and Minnesota and all of the states. So I'm always drawn to the authors and settings. And you really introduced me to another great one by having me read this book. And I just want to say thank you. I enjoyed how you created suspense. You fully fleshed out your characters, and you really handled present-day political and law enforcement intrigue, really. And just a small caveat, thanks for having the scene at the St. Joan of Arc Chapel. I spent time there when our daughter was a student and graduated at Marquette. So that really meant a little bit extra, too, personally.
Oh, Barbara, thanks for calling. Comment, Kevin?
Thanks. All I can say is thanks, Barbara. I'll tell you, it takes a lot to write a book. It takes probably even more to find a publisher. And then to get out, put yourself out there and promote the book. And the biggest joy I get out of that is connecting with readers. And when you say things like that, I can't tell you how much that motivates me to be a better author.
Yeah, thank you.
So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling. I wanted to turn to healthcare for just a minute. As I briefly mentioned earlier, you had a career in healthcare before becoming an author, and a lot of scenes in the book take place in the hospital, and the administrator, whose name I'm forgetting off the top of my head, but it doesn't matter, Alan Anderson.
That's it.
I imagine your experience in healthcare really helped inform. I had a relative who was in the hospital recently, so I had gone through a lot of the experiences. Felt, man, you had those experiences nailed.
Well, thanks for saying that. I mean, I was an administrator for a lot of years, and I was the president of St. Joseph Hospital in Milwaukee for basically 5 years, and I finished my career. I thought maybe I was going to be retired, but I went back to work to get the Mental Health Emergency Center in Milwaukee off the ground, and we got that up and running and accredited, and that basically was opened and accredited by March of let's see, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago now, and I retired right after that. It was kind of like time to devote myself full time to the writing. But when it comes to writing about injuries and hospitals, I mean, I've obviously been in hospitals yeah. most of my career. I know so many different physicians, including emergency physicians that I can reach out to and have leaned on. And then my oldest daughter, Kari, happens to be a surgeon. So I have her read the books, and there's certain things about, you know, she's actually a plastic and reconstructive surgeon. So when she has somebody, you know, like Michelle has her arm is sliced open. And so she helped me with that quite a bit to make sure that it was authentic. But I don't want to get bogged down either any jargon or that kind of thing. So there's a little bit of a balance. I think sometimes you can know that stuff too well.
Yeah, I would guess that could be the case. But you know, I mean, it's all very straightforward, your descriptions and so forth of what's going on and what medical, you know, there's a medical thing that happens to her that you describe pretty darn well, and even I could understand it. So it was well done. The characters, they visit many restaurants and coffee shops during the story. And you talk about, right, you mentioned already that many of them are real.
Yeah, I would say most the coffee shops, restaurants, they are real. And, you know, I think it makes it more authentic. So, you know, and this started in the first book. In the first book, I had a scene where Michelle and Cole get together for the first time, and it's in an Italian restaurant. Now, I could just make one up, and I could describe, like, you know, the white and red checkered tablecloths and the wicker baskets with the candle, and it would be fake. But the Calderon Club in Milwaukee, I have been there 50 times. I mean, I could tell you what it smells like, what it sounds like, the ambiance. I could tell you what's on the menu. And so when I use that place, it's better. In this one, I have a place. So you probably know Milwaukee is arguably the most segregated city in the country. But there is a place there where St. Joseph Hospital sits. It's called Sherman Park. And Sherman Park is one of those kind of magical places where all these cultures and religions get together and live in pretty much harmony. And there's a place there. It's a coffee shop called the Sherman Perk, and it's run by Bob and Pat Olin. And Pat used to be a nurse at St. Joe's. But anyway, it used to be a filling station, and they made it into a coffee shop. And it's really kind of like one of those, the heartbeat of that neighborhood, because they have all these community events there. They have live music. They have different things that otherwise you're not going to find in that neighborhood that much. And I don't know. I love telling those stories. And I'll tell you one more. There's a place I had in my last book. It was called the La Finca Coffee Shop, and it's in St. Francis. It's within walking distance. The Milwaukee FBI field office is actually in St. Francis.
Okay.
It sits right on Lake Michigan, and it's it's amazing. But anyway, La Finca is owned by two sisters, and those sisters have a grandpa who lives in Mexico, and he has a coffee estate down there. So they buy their beans from him, they roast them, and they serve them to us in the Milwaukee area, and La Finca means the estate in Spanish. And so I get to tell these little stories, but I set scenes in these places. And it's funny, you know, I don't do product placement, so I've never taken money for it.
Yeah.
But my protagonist also loves a good craft beer, especially an IPA.
I figured you must like craft beer.
Yeah,
I like
do.
Craft beer.
I do. Yeah. But I have never, you know, I would take a free beer from one of those breweries if it ever comes up. Just, I'm putting it out there, Larry.
Well, what do you, all right, La Finca or any of them, do you let them know in advance? Do you tell them, is it okay? Or what? You don't?
No. But it's funny because the only time I make up a name for a place like that is if something kind of bad is going down there. If I put it in a really positive light, sue me, you know, because I do. I have my MBA too, and I took business law, and I took the law of mass communications, and they're going to have a hard time showing harm when I put them in a good light. And now that's me. My youngest son is a lawyer. He might disagree with that, but no, I don't. But it's funny because I've reached out to them afterward quite often and said, hey, I just want to know. And so I ended up doing book signings at La Finca and at the Sherman Perk. I've done book signings at Good City Brewing and, you know, different places. And it's, you know, that's fun for me.
Yeah, it's kind of a marketing, I guess you could call it in a way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll give you one other example of that. There's, have you ever heard of George Webb's?
Yes.
So George Webb is it's a restaurant. I'll call it a chain, but it's really, you know, 19 different diners all in the Milwaukee area. And it's a place that if you live in the Milwaukee area, you've either gone there after bar time or you've gone there after Sunday mass or something.
Or after a Brewers game.
Or after a Brewers game. If they win 13 in a row, you get a free burger. And so anyway, I actually have my protagonist, Cole, takes one of his people there after they get into an altercation at a bar. And it's just fun. And what was nice about that is I did reach out to George Webb, their marketing person, after the book came out. And I said, hey, just wanted to know I used you in this. And I gave him a copy of the book. And I said, if you like it, give me a shout out on your social media. And they have 25,000 followers. So, you know, well, how does that hurt me? Now, I'm sure, and they did it. I'm not saying all 25,000 George Webb readers are, or, you know, they're all avid readers, but it's been great for me.
I love that story. Well, in your book, and it's an interesting thing, when you're an FBI guy like Cole is, all right, here's his girlfriend, basically, who's been attacked, and it looks like there's a reason for the attack. So he's, you know, there's some protections and so forth that have to be made in her. But then, if you're in his position, there are all kinds of other things that are going on at the same time, and you can't just stop and focus all your attention on this one thing when you got all these other things that are going on. And these other things in your book were really interesting to me. You take on a lot of social issues in the book as part of the other things that Cole is working on. And you've got a poultry plant in Ladysmith that's using underage kids for dangerous jobs. And also coming into play is migrants who are some who are illegal. So you've got right. That as an example.
Right. Well, and this is a
where did that
case...
come from, by the way?
What's that?
Where did that come from, by the way?
Well, first of all, let me say that the issue of using kind of these big societal issues, that's been the case from my first book.
Yeah.
And I will say, though, I hate it when I read a book by an author and they agendize. They try to tell me what to think about something. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that from people on the left, and I've seen it from people on the right, where they want to, you know, tell me what I should believe about this issue, and I don't like it. What I do want to do, again, first and foremost, I want to entertain.
Yeah.
But second of all, there are issues that we all ought to know about. So Big Pharma came up in this book a little bit. It came up a lot in the last book. You know, why are we paying three times as much in this country for our pharmaceuticals as other countries? Well, there's a long list. The biggest one is that industry is the biggest lobbyist when it comes to money dumped on Washington, D.C., and it's not even close. They're number one with a bullet. A lot of people think it's the defense industry, it's big oil. No, it's big pharma. And I once had a U.S. congressman, I was on his healthcare advisory committee, and I asked him after a meeting. At this time, we were only spending twice as much. But I said, why do we allow that? And he said, Kevin, if I'm ever asked, I'll deny I said this. But he said, that's the one industry that has both sides of the aisle bought and paid for.
Wow.
And it just blew me away. And I think there are things that the public should know about. And some of them, I'm not even, you know, so I get into vigilantism a little bit. I get into journalistic integrity in one of my books. And in this one, I get into human trafficking, both in terms of for labor, but also for the sex trade. And when you think about, and I'll tell you, things that happen out in real life that I read about sometimes are so shocking that I can't let them go, and they're going to end up in a book. And one of those, I think it actually happened in Indiana. But there was a plant, a poultry plant, that was raided by the FBI and ICE, and they found, I think it was 20-some illegal immigrants working in this plant underage. And here's the thing. That industry, meatpacking, is one of, if not the most dangerous. Right. And which is why minors can't work there. And there was another situation. This was, I think, in Florida, where a kid who was 12 years old was working in a poultry plant like that and actually got caught in the machinery and was taken up to the ceiling and was asphyxiated, died. And it was horrific. And they looked at his ID, and it was of a 35-year-old man. And this kid was 12. So these things really happened. I put them into fiction, but I use a quote in my second book, and it was by the French philosopher Albert Camus. And he says, fiction is the lie through which we tell the truth. And, I mean, you can get the truth out there through stories like these in a way that if the Wall Street Journal does a story in 6-point type, people might not wade through. But if you're reading a fast-paced thriller or some other novel, I think you might do it. The best example I can give of that is I think about what To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee did to challenge people about how they thought about race, right? And she didn't tell you what to think about race or how you should act, but she just told a story and caused us to think. And so in a very, very lesser way, I'm trying to do that. The other thing I get into in this book is congressional term limits, and I could talk about that for days.
I'd forgotten. I'd kind of forgotten about the congressional term limits, but it was. I'm glad you brought that part up as well. Well, how did you? Let's take the poultry. You must have done some research on poultry operations.
I did. And first of all, my dad grew up on a farm. I was at the farm a lot. So in terms of, they had both dairy, they had hog pens, they had chickens, and I've seen animals slaughtered, blah, blah, blah. I never went into a poultry plant, but I watched video after video of how these poultry plants work. And they're out there online where you can see them, and it's kind of crazy when you think about how many thousands of chickens go through these places in a day, these bigger places. And it is just kind of a maze of moving serpentine machinery that's
moving pretty fast,
constantly in motion. Yeah. And people are just, and you know, there are lots and lots of safety and hygiene things that are in place. And I guess, you know, the industry today versus where it was even 10, 20 years ago is so much safer. The other thing I would say, too, is, you know, it's easy to point at these people in the poultry industry or meatpacking and say, how could you employ those kids? I do try to show, you know, like I use Ladysmith, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. But imagine if you had a big plant outside of Ladysmith and they employed a lot of people, which was important to that city's livelihood. And all of a sudden, you don't have enough adult Americans that want to work there. And they place most of these plants in rural areas where the chickens and hogs, whatever, are raised.
Where they're located.
and so, you know, I can see where well-intentioned people want to keep these plants open and do what has to be done. And then the other thing is, knowing the plight of some of these kids coming over to be in the USA, to have a job where they're actually making money and they're going to school is better than what they had. And I'm not forgiving anything. I'm just trying to say, I'm just like a reporter. mm-hmm. like the reporters used to be back in the day before they started to just give their opinion. Some of this stuff, I don't even know how we solve it, but it's important people know what's going on.
Yeah, I think you are exactly right. Diane, who says she's one of your former high school classmates, emailed us. Diane said, just love all your books and the setting in Prairie du Chien. Diane says she gets a kick out of the names of your characters. It takes her back to her hometown. Keep on writing, and Diane looks forward to more of your books. So, well, that's nice. And names, it comes up. Do you use a lot of friends or former whatever?
Yes, I'm very guilty of that. And but what I do is I'm like Frankenstein, typically. I take like the first name of this person and the last name of that person. And I'm just like, when I do it, I'm chuckling to myself. And, you know, some of these are unsavory characters, right? And after that first book came out, I had different friends, and they say, how come my name's not in the book? And it's funny. There's a childhood friend. I knew her since kindergarten or even earlier. And she said that to me after the first book came out. And I'll just use her first name. It's Nancy. But anyway, in the second book, my villain is a villainess. She's a horrific woman. and I might have used her name for that character. And then when that book came out, I had to reach out to her before it came out. And I said, Nancy, just so you know, your name, I did get it in there this time. I hope you're okay with it. And she has a good sense of humor, so she was fine with it. But there was one time, too, where I used the full name of somebody. And it happened by accident. I had a lawyer, and his name was Frank Barrister. That's what I was going to use. And when my editors went through it, they said, do you know what a barrister is? And I said, yeah, it's a lawyer. It's kind of an English word. And they're like, well, that's too clever by half or whatever that saying is. And so they said, what do you want to use? And so I said, well, how about Frank Gamina? And Frank may be out there. but anyway, so the name Frank Gamina is in that. And when the book was coming out, his wife, Susie, on Facebook, she put a note on one of the things and she said, I can't wait to read it. This is great. And I said, Susie, just, you know, Frank's name might be in the book, or you might recognize a name. And then I reached out to Frank via text, and I said, Frank, I used your name as a character in my book, and it's Frank Gamina. He's a lawyer. And Frank said, well, I don't care, as long as, you know, he's a good guy, right? And I said, well, as good as a lawyer can be. So I have had a blast. I have had a blast with it, Larry. You can't imagine how many names you need to come up with if you're writing several books.
I've got a list of Clara gave me a list of all the names just so I'd have them in front of me. The main characters, and there's like a dozen.
Yeah,
and not counting all of the other ones that come into play.
Right.
In the book. And the book is The Killer's Terms, and the author is Kevin Kleisner. He's our guest today until noon. It's great to have him with us. And a question about the book itself, or about writing, perhaps, maybe even marketing. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. The Larry Mueller Show book club book for this time is The Killer's Terms. The author, Kevin Kleisner, with me in the studio. It's great to be talking with him about his book, his books, really, and about his writing. And I hope you'll join in. Questions 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. Tell us about the research you did on how the FBI operates and the workflow of cases and that sort of thing.
So when I first started this, I didn't know anything about it. But I would say I read voraciously, Stephen King used to say, if you want to be a writer, you should read a lot and write a lot. And I think that's as simple as it gets. But I read probably at least a book a week, and I would say 90% of that is fiction, and 90% of that are thrillers. So in terms of understanding the genre, that type of thing, I think I had kind of a good grounding. But in terms of, like, how federal agents work, that kind of thing, I didn't know a whole lot. And so I actually found a guy. His name was Al Cybini. And Al was a retired federal agent, recently retired. And I said, Al, would you read this manuscript? So before I ever shopped it out, I had him read it. And it's funny because he didn't find the kind of things I thought he might. The kind of things that he pointed out to me were that I'm very loyal, and so my character is very loyal, Cole. And I had him loyal to an Acura TSX, which is what I drive. And Al said, yeah, well, I know you don't want to use, because I didn't want to use the black SUV like everybody uses. And so he says, but it's going to be a domestic car. And he said, you could use a Dodge Charger. So that's what I did. I used a Dodge Charger. He gave me other hints like that. And then if you're a published author, or if you're, you know, have the, you're greenlit to do a movie or something, the FBI actually has a whole department set up to help us.
Oh, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so now with the second and the third book, when I've had questions, I've just reached out to them. And these are actual FBI agents who kind of get rotated out of the field, and they have to work. I don't know if they love it or hate it. But so I've had these guys and gals available to help me with different questions. And then there are times, like in my second book, I had a scene that took place right on the Mississippi River between Wisconsin and Iowa. I had to reach out to the Iowa DNR to ask some questions about what kind of boat would they use, you know, what would they for search and rescue, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, so, yeah, I don't research that kind of thing to death. I'm never going to let something that might be a trivial procedural thing get in the way of a good story. But I do want to be as true to it as I can be.
And you often use statistics or in a very simple, I mean, it's pretty straightforward way when you're talking about these issues, which I appreciated. And I thought, I think those numbers are pretty accurate.
Yes, those are. I mean, even when I get into these issues about human trafficking and, term limits, when I talk about the Pew Research Center, their latest research says that 87% of the adults in the U.S. want term limits, but they haven't brought it up for a vote in over 30 years now. That's all true.
Yeah. There's a reason that it hasn't been brought up.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you get into another one of the issues that Cole works on is one involving a missing Native American woman. And that's another issue that is maybe in existence here in Wisconsin. Probably is.
It is.
It is.
And as a matter of fact, it's bad enough. You know, I say that there's a special commission that was set up, a task force to look into that, and that's actually true. So it's an issue, the human trafficking issue, and young people kind of disappearing that's a real issue in the state, and it's even in rural areas, and it's an even bigger issue with female Native Americans. And so, like I said, there is a commission in the state that's looking at why is this happening? What do we do about it?
And there's another, in the sex trafficking side of thing, there's another incident that involves several restaurant, bars, whatever, across the country. And I wondered to myself if something like that actually existed.
That was the evil in my mind that came up with that.
Boy, it was chilling. To think of that as a possibility. Cole's a very tough, capable, charismatic person. How do you write such a lovable main character, but still make him human.
It's funny because I'm sure there are a few people out there that, again, have known me for a long time that are listening. And when I've given an author talk, I grew up in Prairie du Chien. And when I do my author talk there, this last time we had, I think it was 60 people. We had some people out in the hallway, and it was just great. I mean, they've been so supportive.
Yeah.
But what was, help me out with the question again.
Well, how do you, he's a lovable character, but he's still a human.
So, you know, I take the best traits of myself. So the guy has, he was born in Prairie du Chien, 2 degrees from Marquette. He wrestled. He lives in Milwaukee now. All those things are true of me. And I've had people say, well, he's you, isn't he? And I said, well, yes, if I was just a little taller, smarter, you know, stronger, he would be me. But I try to, you know, I don't want any character to be cookie cutter or some cardboard cutout. I want them to have weaknesses. I want them to have weak moments. I want them to feel the downs as much as they feel the ups. And, you know, I don't like somebody who's superhuman. That's not what this series is meant to be.
No. I certainly agree with that. Oh, Cassandra emailed us just as a comment on using friends' names. Cassandra says, Nelson DeMille uses friends' names in his books if his friends will make a donation to charity.
And when I'm as famous as Nelson DeMille, or you mentioned John Grisham before, I'll do that same thing.
Oh, man. So you've got three. This is the third, and now you've got a chance to write another one. Your publisher wants you to go ahead. Is that what you're going to do? Or
actually, no. I am going to continue the series because the characters have become like family to me. But I did tell my publisher I want to continue the series, but I need to take a bit of a sabbatical because I have an idea for an historical fiction novel set in the early 1830s in Prairie du Chien. And I'm going to have to find a different publisher because that's out of their kind of their genre they deal with. But there were so many things that took place then. We had Jefferson Davis was there, who ends up being the head of the Confederacy. You had Chief Black Hawk. You had Zachary Taylor, who ends up being the 12th president. You have William Beaumont, who ends up being the father of gastroenterology. And he did that by keeping a soldier who had an open stomach wound. He could have closed the wound, but he kept it open so he could see what happened when something would be digested and what it would look like. And you also had five African-American women who were in Prairie du Chien at the time, which is probably five more than are there today. But two were indentured servants, two were slaves, and one was free. One of those free women ends up being the first doctor in Wisconsin. And so wow. I call it the confluence. I haven't written three words, but it's the confluence of where the Mississippi and Wisconsin rivers come together, and it's the confluence of all these important people at a certain point in time.
Well, let me know when you get that book finished, because we'll get you back for that for sure.
Oh, bless you.
In the meantime, The Killer's Terms are really a great read. And Kevin, I thank you so much for writing it and for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Kevin Kleisner, the author and the book, The Killer's Terms. It was great to have him with us and for our book club. And I'm hoping that we'll get him back when his next book comes out that's set in Prairie du Chien. Well, coming up, we're going to talk about Earthfest and Earthfest activities. I'm Larry Mehler for WPR News.